This is CliffCentral.com.
Sex talk on CliffCentral.com, unscripted, uncensored, and radio. We missed being here last week, and it's so cool to be back. So, morning, Tamar.
Good morning, Jonty.
Your hair looks really nice.
Thank you so much. It's after being neglected for a month of preparing our sex, but I went back to civilization.
Okay. So, we need to play this. Is it working now?
No,
it's not working yet. Okay.
Today it's rustic.
Morning, Lisa.
Good morning, Jones.
How are you feeling?
I'm feeling fantastic.
Don't lie. Don't you lie. Lisa's sitting
okay.
here.
A little bit of drugs. Okay, maybe a lot of drugs and some needles in my arms, but I'm fantastic. Okay,
so we actually have a hospital abscondee in our midst.
She ran
morning.
Away. She and we're not talking about the mental. The mental.
Okay. Yes, no? Let's try now.
This show contains adult content. If you find it offensive, please go to the CliffCentral.com website where there's a show for you.
Okay, that was important.
Yeah, it was.
Absolutely.
Now you all know.
That's it. So, we will leave out curtain call this morning, seeing we have already started.
Mm.
So, very, very special guest with us.
Very beautiful special guest today.
I'm not that special. I'm just ordinary.
No,
not at
not.
All.
Not at all. So, please join our conversation on
0861-555-189 or join us on WeChat's message to screen. Alternatively, you can tweet us at cliffcentral.com, at ErosLifeSA, at Lisa the Lesbian.
Fantastic. So, please introduce yourself because that's going to be so much easier.
All right. Well, I think my name is Anastasia Thompson.
Okay.
I'm a medical doctor. I'm a transgender woman. I'm an author. I'm an activist. And I'm really not good at radio.
Okay. No, you're fantastic at radio.
Oh, thanks. You flatter me.
So, everybody we have in the studio is fantastic at radio.
I think there's one exception, and we know who you're talking about. Yes. One person that prefers to orgasm than to talk.
Yeah. That's okay, too, because it's
okay.
A form of communication.
It is a form.
Absolutely. So, we're going to talk transgender. We're going to talk a whole lot of issues related to that, which is really, really beautiful. I want to say to all our listeners, I met so many people at Sexpo who came up and said they listened to the show and they love it and how inspiring and all these wonderful things. They were so touching and so beautiful. Thank you so much. It was really wonderful to have that opportunity to meet you guys. Really was beautiful. So it's so, so appreciated.
We were so happy to represent Cliff Central happily in that mayhem of
beautiful naked woman.
Yeah, I
want to
say chaos and common, but you got it. Yeah, for sure.
And I think somebody is coming to talk to us a little bit about their
experience
at Sexpo.
Yeah, a very, very mysterious guest. We're going to see her just now.
Okay. Mm. So, before anything else.
Ninja sex. Chocolate starfish. Twitter bag. Calypagian.
Today's dirty dictionary word is.
Today's dirty dictionary word is N-gayed.
Dirty dictionary word.
So, dirty dictionary is a feature we have. We pick a word and everybody has to guess it. So, Tamar, any ideas?
Definitely not.
Lisa?
Well,
right up your alley.
I was going to say it because it's engaged. So, maybe two girls with their fingers up each other. I'm thinking very, very picture-orientated.
There's some very quick raised eyebrows next to you.
Anastasia, do you have a better idea of two girls with their fingers up each other?
I still have that mental image in my head, and it's occupying a lot of brain space. I don't think I'm going to be able to come up with a definition.
I might be able to come up with a couple of things off that image.
Okay, so the filters have totally been dropped here big time. I can
Who needs filters? It's Cliff Central.
Okay,
we
so
don't believe in that.
Please message us, call us, tell us what N-gayed is. E-N-G-A-Y-E-D. Let us know what you think that is. Okay. I have a starting point that I was thinking about this morning. So in the week, I wrote a blurb for the show, and I used the term two-spirit people, which I really, really like. And you very gently and politely took me to task for it. And you sent me a very cool article, which I really learned something from. The question comes from that as our starting point is, how important are the labels that we use and why?
All right. Well, Jonty, to start off, I have two opinions when it comes to labels. Basically, I see both sides of the argument.
Yes.
I think labels, on the one hand, have the potential to be very empowering because having a label, having a word that we can identify with, that other people identify with, it reminds us that we're not broken, we're not defective, we're not alone. There's a lot of other people that are experiencing some of the things that we're experiencing, and I think that can be very empowering. On the other hand, we also know that labels can be a tool that are used in a derogatory manner. Mm-hmm. They can be used to push people down, to oppress them, to shove them into boxes that they don't necessarily belong in. So I think it really depends on where that label is coming from. Is it something that I'm claiming for myself? I choose this label. This is what I identify as. It's how I want to be known. It's where I'm comfortable. Or is it a label that I'm pushing onto you based on my own prejudices and not based on what you want or your experiences or your identity?
Okay. And the other side of the coin, and one that I talk about a lot, is the limitation of labels. Simply because once we're in that box, it becomes very difficult either to move out of it or it does become quite restrictive.
Well, absolutely right. As soon as you do have a label, there are certain expectations that come with it. There are things that people in society attach to these labels. You know, if you're, and I'm going to use an example that I think is going a little bit out of fashion, but if you're a lesbian, you're automatically considered to be butch. Mm. You have to be wearing a plaid lumberjack shirt. You have to have a short haircut. You're not allowed to grow your nails or have them painted. Things like that.
Mm. Oh, Lisa is shifting uncomfortably
in her seat. I'm like checking all those. Excuse me.
I've done it.
Lisa has a very, very beautiful perfume, which I can smell all the way up to here. So she's not answering the butch.
So please take her shopping after this to get a butch.
Yeah. I do have a butch jacket, actually. That's how Angela met me.
I believe the scent is Eau de Hospital. Is that right?
I have no idea. Oh, yes. I have to agree with you, though, on the labeling thing, on the butch thing. I get extremely offended if anybody calls me butch, simply because I don't classify myself as butch. I classify myself as lesbian. And the word butch does have a very derogative meaning to it, and I don't like it. I really don't like it.
Yeah. So, because I love words, and I write a lot and use a lot and give a lot of talks, and the words are so important because of what they mean, but they're also the limitation.
Well, this is the thing, and I think it's really up to us when we claim an identity, if we're prepared to stand up and make ourselves visible and to say, this is who I am and this is my identity, this is the label that I'm claiming, but these are the ways in which your misconceptions are wrong about me. We have to stand up and we have to say that, because people are going to make these judgments. And it's up to me to say, oh, that's not true about me. And maybe you need to reevaluate your way of thinking.
But it's also that a lot of people are just misinformed. You know, a lot of the times when people speak to me, and even when I did the gay show, That's a Gay Show, I had a lot of people on the show, and I would have transgender and drag people on my show as well. I'd be so scared to use one specific word to describe someone just simply because I don't know any better. And no amount of research that you can actually do will tell you what a person is and is not comfortable with.
That's a very good point, Lisa. That's actually really, really important. Identity is something that belongs to the individual. My identity belongs to me. It doesn't belong to anyone else, and no one else has the right to choose what name to call me by, what pronouns to use for me, what labels to assign to me. That's a decision that I need to make for myself, and if someone tries to do it on my behalf, I have to take that power back.
I so agree with you.
And the difficult part of that is that the language is all that we have. Because I know in the work that we do, for example, there are certain words that we use for certain experiences that don't come close, but it's all that we do have. And that becomes the limitation.
Language is a very limited modality, and communication is limited by that. We don't have the tools and the resources. And the concepts that we're dealing with are all things that are so varied and so diverse and so far removed from a lot of the stuff that we were brought up believing, the stuff that was pushed on us by parents, by schools, by society, by the media, etc., etc. And we have to try and make sense of them in whatever way we can. And language is one of the tools that we use to do it. But definitely, I agree with you. It's not all-encompassing. It's not the be-all and the end-all.
So let's go back to the beginning. Your story, where does that start?
Well, I don't know. It depends on your political stance. You might say that it began at conception. Or you might say it began with, I don't know, ovogenesis or something. I stand with PP.
Okay. So you were born in the Jewish community.
Yeah.
Traditional
well,
Jewish community.
Yeah, pretty much. That's one way of putting it. I went to a very religious school. there was a little bit of conflict because home was always very secular, school was always very religious, and with that kind of a conservative environment, there's a lot of prescriptive ways of thinking and understanding, and there's a lot of internalized prejudice that you drag up with you along the way. Mm. You know, no one ever says to you, oh, there's something wrong with not being cisgender. There's something wrong with not being straight. But you internalize it anyway. You understand these are things that are spoken about in very hushed tones. They're not addressed directly. But there's prejudice and there's stigma.
So when did you realize something was different?
I realized something was different from a very young age. Mm-hmm. I had trouble fitting in, and it became sort of exaggerated or aggravated when I went into high school and suddenly the boys' campus and the girls' campus
was split. So
what does
young age mean?
Well, I can't give you a date. I can't say that it happened on January the 24th, 1990, because I don't know. I just remember that when I had to start interacting with other people based on the expectation, you know, I'm supposed to play with the other boys and have the same kind of interests and values and ideas, that just didn't fit for me. I always felt like a bit of an outsider.
Okay. So
that's the way it happens for all of us, though. Mm. It's just at some age you reach and you're like, something's just not right.
Yeah, there's a growing awareness that crystallizes at some point.
Well, okay. I think this is exactly the problem. There's a lot of us that don't exactly fit in, and it takes us some time to understand why it is that we don't fit in. Because if there's a conflict between your internal experience or your values or your perceptions and that of the environment that you're in, the first thing that you're aware of is the existence of conflict. Mm. You know, something doesn't gel. I don't fit in here. I'm not one of these people. But you don't exactly know why it is. Mm. And then you have to start examining the reasons. And it's very difficult for a child to do that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Especially because we don't have the education. We don't have that limited vocabulary, but vocabulary nonetheless. We're not taught that these kind of concepts exist.
Exactly.
And you spend a lot of time just being confused, feeling out of place, wondering what it is. Why am I different?
And an internalized sense of supposed right and wrong, that you don't fit into a box.
Well, I think this is the thing, and I know definitely in my case, and maybe some people can relate to this experience, but I went into a kind of a survival mode. I mean, I was a smart kid. I was perceptive. I could see that there were certain expectations of the way I needed to act. And before I understood what I was doing, I was pretending so that I could fit in because attention was uncomfortable. I didn't want anyone to pick up on the fact that there was something off about me or different about me. I knew it, but I wanted to hide it because that was the path of least resistance.
Did your family know this?
Well, I don't think necessarily that they did. I mean, obviously, it's difficult. You're looking back at an entire history, in my case, nearly three decades, and trying to pick out the evidence. And I see it for myself. In retrospect, if I look at some of my behaviors and some of the things that I did to try and fit in, I just say, oh, my God. You were doing the worst possible job. How is it possible that people didn't pick up on it?
But you never knew. You didn't have other tools at the time.
I didn't know what I was doing.
So you did what you did because that was what you had.
Absolutely. It was a survival mechanism. Mm. I quickly learned to understand, okay, some of these behaviors, which are very natural to me, are just not acceptable, and I have to suppress them. Mm. I have to act in other ways that aren't natural. And I knew that it was taking a toll on me. It took some very concerted effort, some very conscious decision making and trying to put on this front.
And what was the cost of that to you?
It's an insidious process, and it happens very slowly, very gradually. It's not like, oh my God, I'm completely run down, wiped out, exhausted, depressed from one day of doing this, because it builds up and it's slow. And as the kids around you are growing and their behaviors are changing and the way that they think and the way that they interact with each other is changing, you have to adapt. You have to be resilient. You have to keep your game up in order to maintain the same kind of standard that everyone else is currently going through. That's the normal process for them. And the way that it works is that until you reach a point where you're almost in crisis and you start to re-examine everything with a critical eye, you don't realize it. You sweep it under the rug. It's one more thing. And they pile up. And then suddenly you unpack all of it and you're almost blown away under the gravity of it.
How much more will I do? Mm. How much more will I do? What was the turning point for you?
So was there a retrospective sense of selling yourself, selling your soul?
I think there was definitely a retrospective idea that I was, it wasn't even retrospective. Mm. I knew that I was performing before I understood why I was performing.
Yes.
It's a very difficult idea to have to reconcile with your past self. Mm. Because on the one hand, I feel like that persona that I had to maintain for so long, that was time that was stolen from the real me. Those were opportunities that I never had. Those were interactions and relationships that I had to forego, or that were replaced with ones that were factitious. Mm. And it's difficult. There's a strong temptation to feel resentful about that. But at the same time, I have to look at the position I was in. I was young. I didn't understand. I didn't have the support. I didn't have the education. I didn't have the role models or the representation to look at someone in this position and say, oh, that resonates with me. Mm. I identify with that. I just knew that I felt that I was abnormal. And it's difficult, but I can't blame myself. I did the best that I could. The fallout was horrible, but I did the best that I could at the time.
Mm. And did you turn that mostly inward?
I think it's difficult not to. I think I don't want to go into an entire sub-story, but I didn't have the easiest childhood.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of conflict and strife at home that I had to deal with. Definitely from a young age, I felt almost a responsibility on me to manage the emotions of my parents, one in particular. And there was a lot of emotional abuse that came out of that. And based on that, based on geographical considerations, because I lived far away from the school, I didn't have opportunities to socialize outside of school hours, that kind of thing, I became very much sort of self-sufficient. And a lot of the dialogues that I had were very much internal.
Okay. And were those very negative, very positive? Were they trying to find answers, those kind of dialogues? Were they kind of looping?
A lot of it, to be quite frank, was just damage control. Mm-hmm. It was, how do I prevent myself from being put in a position that's uncomfortable? How do I avoid the wrath of this emotionally abusive relationship that I'm involved in with one of my parents? And a lot of it was just, how do I make it through today? How do I get to tomorrow? I don't think that after dealing with all of that, there was a lot of energy left to actually look inside and start to examine, what is it? Is there something that doesn't fit, and how can I pick it out and pin it down? Because until you identify it, you can't deal with it.
Mm. Was it quite solitary time, or were there people you were close to, even one or two?
It was very difficult. Mm. I spent a great deal of time just by myself. I sort of felt like I had to function as my own support structure. The internet was a little bit of a relief because it enabled me to interact with people, to communicate with people, because it was difficult to do it face-to-face. I didn't have the proximity. I didn't have the, you know, I didn't feel like I could ask for a lift into Joburg that was 30 Ks away from where I was living. There was a lot of pressure on me not to interact with members of my family that were supported. The other side of the family was almost demonized. And if I expressed a desire, oh, I'd like to go visit my mom, I'd like to go visit my brother, then the blame for that fell on me, and it was uncomfortable. I didn't like it. I tried my best to avoid it. So I did almost learn how to act as my own support structure in that sense.
Mm. On the web, did you find people in similar situations, similar spaces?
Well, I didn't exactly, because I'm giving away my age now, but the internet had kind of just broken in South Africa at that time. And I mean, it was good enough to find someone who was around the same age, maybe living in America, maybe living in Cape Town. Maybe there was some commonality. Maybe one of the friends would have been Jewish, something like that.
Mm.
But basically, you were grateful for any kind of commonality.
Mm.
The kind of communities that we have today that are available on the internet, those resources, those forums, those support structures, they didn't exist back then. And even if they did, I wouldn't have known what to look for, because I didn't know what I was experiencing.
Yeah. So that's kind of now where we go, is when did this start to kind of crystallize for you? What was actually happening? Who you really were?
It was a very gradual process. Uh-huh. And a lot of it I have to attribute to sheer dumb luck, if you want to call it that. Maybe it was serendipity. Maybe it was destiny, fate. I don't know. But basically, I started, meeting people in social settings who coincidentally happened to identify as gender fluid, as gender queer, then I started to look for information on this because it was a foreign concept to me. So I started to read up, and then I understood this transgender umbrella. It's something that exists. There are people who don't identify with the sex that they were assigned at birth. And then it was a gradual process, but eventually the more I learned, the more I read, the more words and vocabulary that I came into contact with, I started to apply these ideas to myself, and I started to look at myself in that light and think, could that possibly be me? And it fit. It made sense. Suddenly, for the first time in my life, everything started to fall into place.
So there was a resonance with something.
Absolutely. Yeah. But not to say that it was overnight, because it took time. And I mean, that realization that I might be transgender, Jonty, it's scary. It's shocking.
Absolutely.
It turns your world upside down.
Yeah. And when that realization did come, even when it was kind of identified, did you have resources to talk to?
Well, I struggled with it for a while, but I knew I can't do this on my own. Mm. And my experiences, I'm trying to make sense of them. I'm puzzling through it, but the more people that I interact with, the easier it's going to be. So some of those people that I met put me in touch with a support group, something that's run by transgender people, for trans people. It's a safe space. You can express yourself in any way. You can decide on your name and your pronouns, and you're going to be respected. There's no danger there. Mm. And I started going to these meetings, and I found that it was an environment in which I could actually relax, which was a very foreign feeling for me. Being able to relax is not something that I was used to at all. And slowly, gradually, because I wrestled with the concept for a long time. I argued against it. I tried to convince myself, firstly, that I'm not trans. And then secondly, once I understood, okay, I definitely am transgender, then it was, is there any way that I can avoid transition? Because I had no idea what it was going to involve, but I knew it was going to be scary and big and difficult. And I searched inside myself. I said, is there some part of me that can be comfortable inside a male identity? And it was a couple of weeks or months that I toyed with these ideas. I said, all right, maybe I'm non-binary. Maybe I'm partially male, partially female, something there. Just because of the familiarity and the safety of it. Not because it fit for me, but just because this is what I've done for so many years. And if I can carry on doing that, then my life is going to be easier. But eventually, I couldn't run from it anymore.
So it was a real struggle to accept yourself.
Well, it was. It was a struggle not because I wasn't secure in my identity or because the idea of being transgender was that abhorrent to me. It wasn't like that. It was just, if I have to transition, if I have to go from presenting as male to presenting as female, I have to go through the medical system, I have to interact with all these people, it's going to change everything that I'm accustomed to. My relationships with family members are going to change. My friendships are going to change. My career is going to change. Everything is going to shift, and it's going to be irrevocable. And that's a very big realization.
When you had made that, and you'd made that identification with yourself, what was family response, friends response?
Well, it took me a while to be able to come out and to be ready for it, because it's a process. To understand myself took a long time. I thought a lot. I spent a lot of time on introspection and internal dialogue. And I had whatever period of time to come to terms with it. When you disclose to someone who's known you for many, many years, and they become attached to this idea that they have in their minds of who you are, this picture, this persona, this person who they've got all these emotions invested in, hopes and expectations and love and all of that all rolled up. And it's devastating to say that person does not exist. It's a fallacy. And to go through that process, to get yourself in a position where you feel you're ready to do that is difficult.
Because I talk a lot about the fact that we have relationships from mask to mask. And at some point, those masks start to fall away. We reveal more of ourselves. That starts to get us into very difficult positions, because that's not what I signed on for.
Yeah, I definitely see that side of the argument. On the other hand, you know, I was in a position where this dysphoria that I'd been wrestling with, even before I understood what it was something that stood in the way of my relationships. It poisoned them. It was toxic. It meant that the way I interacted with friends and family was tarnished. And I built up these defense mechanisms, these barriers. I walled myself in. I kept all personal information to myself. I didn't have deep conversations with people about my feelings. I had those conversations with them about their feelings. And then they tried to ask about me or to probe or whatever it is. And I learned ways to deflect it. You know, I was very quick-witted. I'd throw them off with a joke. And eventually people understand, oh, this is something that this person does not want to talk about. And they stop pestering you. But it meant that all of those relationships were very one-sided and they weren't genuine. I didn't have that proper connection with people. And, of course, it was difficult to disclose. There's no doubt about that. But once I'd been able to, then I could let people in for the first time. It was liberating. It was amazing.
How old were you when that process was happening?
It wasn't all that long ago, to be perfectly frank with you. And, I mean, really, the turning point for me, and I always put the disclaimer out there. My experiences are mine. They are not representative of every single transgender person. There are some people out there who will say, oh, that really resonates with me. I had the same thing. There are many who won't. So for me, the decision was, all right, I need to transition and I need medical support to do it. I need to go on hormonal therapy. And once I had taken that first tablet, the clock was ticking. Because now you know eventually there are going to be changes.
It makes
things
it incredibly real and concrete.
It does. It makes it so tangible. And, you know, before that point for me, it was, okay, well, you know, I can defer it. Put it on the back burner just another day, another week, another however long. Once you've taken that tablet, everything is very real. And now suddenly you have this obligation to tell the people who are close to you. Because, I mean, imagine if they have to say, oh, suddenly you're developing breasts. What's going on there? You know, why are you growing your hair out? What happened to your beard? You can't hide it for that long. And when you tell them, I think, at least for me, I wanted it to be on my own terms. I didn't want to be confronted.
Where are you in that transition process now?
All right, so that's an interesting question because I have some problems with the word transition. We use it in common vernacular, and that's the terminology that we have. The problems that I have with it is twofold. It implies that there's a starting point and an end point. And like I've said, everyone's journey is different. People choose different things. Some of them want medication. Some of them want surgery. Some of them don't want. Some of them do want and they don't have access to it. They can't afford it. So for various reasons, no two people experience the same journey. And the problem is if I say to you, oh, I'm 60% through, it invalidates the journey of someone else. If I say I'm completely transitioned, then is the next transgender person not? Are they somehow incomplete? So that's the one problem that I have. And then the second point, again, is it implies that you're moving from one spot to another spot. So in my case, that the interpretation would be moving from male to female. But I don't identify as ever having been male. There was a time that I presented as male. There was a time that people I interacted with read me as male, but I never was that. That was a front. My identity has always been this, even before I understood it. So those are my problems with the word transition, and that's probably about the best answer that I can give you to that question.
Okay. You went through med school, which is generally a very conservative environment. How did you go through med school?
What did
you present as? And through the journey of med school, which is 6-7 odd years more.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
What were the changes in that journey?
John T., I've got to warn you, if you're starting me on the medical establishment, I'm going to say the feminazi in me is going to come out and she's going to bare her claws and she's going to hiss and all of these things.
Okay. But I'm more interested in you in that environment. I understand the environment. It's more kind of.
Oh, yeah.
Where were you in that?
Well, I mean, it was difficult. I studied in Pretoria, so however conservative.
Which is even more so.
Absolutely right. And I mean, I always say medicine, especially the academic side of it, is very much an old boys club. It really is. It's these old white men with their long beards in their white coats. And, you know, they sit in this ivory tower, and anything that doesn't conform to their ideas is problematic. Mm. And there was a lot of sexism. I witnessed it for myself. Anyone who was read as being female, the question was, oh, well, firstly, why aren't you in the kitchen? Why aren't you barefoot and pregnant? Are you going to specialize in something like anesthetics? Because for a little blonde girl like you, that's a very good field. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, very regulated hours. You know what you're doing.
Oh, yeah. You know, obviously you can't go into orthopedics because, you know, you can't manipulate bones and things. That's not womanly work.
Anesthetics or lab work.
Yeah, anesthetics. Just like sweep the floor, that kind of thing. Housekeeping, because that's what it is.
Or radiology. That's where they put
you. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, wow. Radiology, lab work, and anesthetics. Those are the disciplines.
Yeah.
Or psychiatry, because psychiatry is only for gay people and women. I mean, obviously.
Yeah. You sit behind a desk, prescribe, a little bit of talking. There
go,
we go.
Go and treat the feelings. It's not real medicine, so we can let you have that.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it was difficult. Again, med school just comes, well, in fact, a lot of my life story in particular, but I think this is a concept that will resonate with a lot of transgender people. A lot of it was about survival.
Hmm.
So med school, it was about survival. There was enough prejudice already because I didn't speak Afrikaans. I had my surname kind of gave me away as being Jewish, which in Pretoria is a little bit problematic because people want to convert you first. And, you know, after that, they'll talk to you. It's, have you considered letting Jesus into your life?
Have you?
And
have you?
Yeah. It's like, I don't need a new religion. Mm. I haven't used up the old one yet kind of thing. But it's very difficult to get that concept across. So there was already a lot of prejudice, and just getting through it. I mean, the hours were long. The work was grueling. The expectations were ridiculous. Mm. It's become a little bit better for students since then because new regulations have been passed. But at the time I was in med school, and I sound like an old woman now, but back in my day when we had to walk through the snow and et cetera, et cetera, definitely there was very little time left for myself. And bearing in mind, again, I didn't stay in res or anything like that. I lost at least 2 hours a day driving to and from varsity.
Mm.
And ward rounds that start at 7 in the morning, it means you have to be there at 6. You have to draw everyone's bloods. You have to do all the skivvy work. You really just get crapped on by everyone for everything.
Mm.
And it's really just about survival. You have no time to spend on yourself. There is no self-care.
Mm. Wow. Where are you in relation to Judaism today?
That's an interesting question because
I thought so too.
I don't know if I can give you a succinct answer to that, so just cut me off if I start to ramble.
That's fine.
I always had a very tenuous relationship with Judaism because I had this very strong internal sense of faith, and obviously I had that conflict that we spoke about earlier, very secular home, very orthodox education. And I mean, I was a young kid. I believed everything that everyone told me. So school said, keep kosher. And then home said, don't you dare keep kosher. We won't support you in that. So it was very difficult. And I always felt like a bit of an outsider in the community. Then that persisted as I grew up. Med school made it difficult to even be involved in Yom Tov or holidays or Shabbos or anything like that. I went and did my internship and my community service in Mpumalanga. And then suddenly I came back to Joburg and I started working in a private practice in the northern suburbs with a lot of Jewish patients, and I'm back in the community. And again, there's this very sort of tenuous involvement. Mm. It's come to shul for Passover or come for New Year, Rosh Hashanah, something like that. And sitting in shul was difficult. I'm not going to lie to you. Putting on a suit and cufflinks and a tie and pretending and standing amidst all these people, just feeling so much like an outsider. Firstly, because of, you know, I'm secular, I'm not particularly orthodox. And then secondly, because of the gender issue, that made it very difficult. But at the same time, I always persistently, through all of this, had my own internal sense of faith. And obviously coming out very publicly, as I've done, and making media appearances, talking to talk show hosts of dubious repute. Is like that a good...
That's us.
Did I get it right? Dubious repute.
That's us. We're happy with that.
Yeah, I figured it fit. If the chef fits, then buy 8 of them.
That's right. We'll happily take that one.
All right, brilliant. You know, it's obviously it's exposed me to, or it's exposed a lot of members of the community to my story. Mm. And the feedback has been very mixed. So when I get someone who's really couching their own personal prejudice under the veil of religion and saying, oh, you are an affront to God. Mm. Your faith is casting you out. It's that is a bitter pill to swallow, because my personal faith makes me think, well, I was created this way. It's not a choice that I made. No one in their right mind ever chooses to be transgender. I promise you that right now. No one puts themselves through this unless they have to do it in order to survive. It just doesn't work like that. And people who say, oh, you chose to be this abomination, I mean, that really, really stings. Because I was created this way. And if you have that faith in a divine being or entity or God or goddess, whatever you want to term it, I was created transgender. Mm. That's the role that I have to fill. So it's been a struggle to reconcile that kind of faith with the problems from organized Orthodox religion, and to try and reconcile it and to find a space that's safe where I can exist inside a community that doesn't cast me out on the basis of who I am.
Mm. Impact on your practice?
Well, it was a little bit of a kick in the pants for me because, all right, I imagine that I can't say that there was a necessity for me to leave where I was working, but there would have been immense challenges associated with staying there. And the fact is, I was an employee in that practice. It wasn't my own endeavor. Mm-hmm. And I kind of just took this dramatic, massive change that's going on in my life as a wake-up call. Well, now you've got to go and do your own thing. You know, it's enough standing in someone else's shadow and being afraid of spreading your wings. But, I mean, the idea of going solo and opening your own practice is absolutely terrifying. But once I looked in the mirror and I realized, well, I've dealt with a lot of adversity already. Why can't I face up to that? So that's where I am at the moment. I'm in the process of trying to get things rolling.
Okay.
I must say, it's actually amazing hearing you tell your story, how closely our stories are linked. I mean, I haven't gone through what you've gone through, but the same struggles as coming out to your family and friends and being accepted and all of that. But at the same time, I still find that the gay community, which is supposed to be LGBT, that it's completely, we're not linked. We're not standing together. Do you find that too, that a lot of gay people misunderstand transgender people and there isn't really that, you know, we're actually a part of the same family, we should be standing together?
Oh, absolutely. And definitely what you're saying to me, Lisa, resonates very strongly because, I mean, we take, all right, LGBTQIA plus, and basically what we're saying is the original idea behind that was anyone who isn't straight and simultaneously cisgender is marginalized, and let's try and represent them. But the problem is that very quickly within that movement to represent the marginalized, the majority group within them, and that is cisgender gay men, started to monopolize the movement. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, I don't like to generalize. There is a lot of transphobia amongst the gay and the lesbian communities. And there is that prejudice that exists, you know, we can start talking about Germaine Greer and second wave feminism and trans exclusion and all of those kind of things. You know, I want to be a little bit more personal and less political. But definitely those are very valid concepts. And I think the problem is when marginalized people who've been shunned by mainstream society, I'm doing air quotes now because you can't see, it's when those people start marginalizing other people. And it really, really upsets me because we know how it feels to be marginalized. It's distressing. Mm-hmm. And then you start doing that to someone else. I mean, you know, pay it forward with something that's good, with understanding, with love, with compassion, but don't do it with discrimination.
Okay.
Yeah. It's quite a story.
I have to be honest. Can you just stay forever? This is like, I have to be extremely, extremely frank. I've never heard such,
passion.
Exactly, such passion, but also, you're so self-conscious. You're so goddamn clever. Sorry, God. But you know, somebody that is not only analytical and bright and clever, somebody that is also, the emotional and, you know, the intelligence from within is just so deep. I'm overwhelmed.
Oh, Tamara, you're flattering me, but really, what?
She just wants to get into your pants.
No, no. For a change, I would like to, but I'm putting it aside. No, no. Continue, please, before we
got to stay in character. You do.
Yeah, absolutely. I know it's Cliff Central. We have to. Is this? Should I drop an F bomb, John T?
Yes.
All right. Fuck. Is that good? Did I do well?
Yay.
I met the poster. Yes. Round of applause.
Go. Wonderful.
Now but you're definitely part of the point that I really want to get across, and this comes back to what you're saying, Tamara, is it's really important because prejudice, I believe, comes from a lack of understanding, and it comes from viewing certain people, certain human beings, as other and as lesser. And I always say it's very difficult to oppress someone when you see them as a human being. And when you have an emotional connection to someone, you can't say, oh, this person is suddenly subhuman, they're lesser. It becomes very, very difficult. So I am being very candid and very forthcoming, and I'm trying to express those emotions. I mean, it is liberating for me because for a long time I couldn't do it. I wasn't in touch with my emotions. I swept them under the rug, as we've discussed. But definitely what I want people who are listening to understand and to develop is that emotional connection with my own humanity to find something that resonates. Because sure, I'm transgender. Lisa is a lesbian. John T is John T. You know, we all have these very different experiences and narratives, but a lot of the human experience resonates and there's commonality in it. And I think that's valuable.
Extremely.
True. Yeah. Fantastic.
I have to say, if anybody other than Casper was sitting outside, we would certainly ask them for more time here. But
don't worry.
Casper, we can't.
Always. Yeah, we don't want to. We miss him.
Definitely a conversation that we will continue. Because what's fascinating to me, and the more that I learn, the bottom line of growth of spirituality, of humanity, is the more that we feel connected, the more separated we are, the more isolated we are, the greater the judgment, the greater the fear, the greater the prejudice.
Oh, yeah,
and
definitely.
From connection comes everything that we're
absolutely
part
right.
Of,
I mean,
that.
As soon as we're confronted with something that is outside our sphere of understanding, it can be very scary, and there's two ways to respond to that. It's either make a big deal out of the differences, push people away, say, oh, this is what separates you from me, or it's try and cross that bridge. You know, bridge the gap and make the effort, try to see things from someone else's perspective, try to understand what they're going through, and then find the commonality in that and say, oh, we're actually not that different after all.
And that's what, and the more we look, the more we will find the commonality when we're willing. Because I know even in the work that I do, the level of prejudice is nowhere near what you have experienced, but it is so marginalized in our society.
Yeah,
and
absolutely right.
It, you know,
absolutely right. And there is nothing wrong with what you do. And you need to surround yourself with people that understand that. Because
that's
until... Oh, yeah, absolutely. Your motley crew is fantastic. These dubious show hosts are brilliant. And, you know, really what I think is important to understand is that when you're part of a marginalized group, for whatever reason, be it you or me or whatever it is, we are marginalized. Until we find allies in what we call the mainstream to speak out on our behalf, people that are considered to be equal to the ones who are discriminating against us, we're facing an uphill battle. So we really need to win those people over and get their understanding and get their support and have them speaking on our behalf in addition to making our own voices heard.
Absolutely. So we have a different voice now. Morning, Babs.
Hello. How are you?
Good. Thanks. How are you?
I'm quite good.
So Babs is a marketing expert.
Yes.
Absolutely. And we met Babs at Sexpo.
Yes, we did.
Okay,
we
Babs, bumped. You need to talk really close to the microphone.
We That's meet all good people.
There we go. No, right, closer. There we go. Okay. What was your experience of Sexpo, Babs?
I loved it. It was amazing. I mean, the Sexpo is very special to me. I started going a
Babs,
few...
Babs, my...
No, it's not her. It's the microphone a bit low, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
So put it up.
She's used to be behind the scenes. She's the one who's usually putting everybody in front.
Okay, so now we need you out there.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah,
oh,
that's
wow.
Better.
Sexy
that's
voice.
Better.
Thank you. So I was saying that the Sexpo is sex was really special to me.
Sex is really special for you.
Well, so, sex. Yeah. I started going a few years ago to support a friend. He's in a wheelchair. He's got an autoimmune illness. And he drew up a bucket list of crazy things he wanted to do.
Yeah.
And the sexpo was one. So I've been to a few, and I'm a bit of a veteran. And this one, I think, was the one in Johannesburg that I just went to last weekend. It was really, really amazing. And I think there were three things for me that I really liked. The first is that, I mean, I felt a real sense of community, which is unusual. People of all different races and colors. I mean, I made a few friends in the queue, even queuing to get in. I thought that was really, I think the event organizers really should be proud of that, because I think we live such parallel lives, I think, sometimes in South Africa. So it was really like a family kind of community vibe, which I really, really loved. I think the second thing was obviously Tamara's area was really, really, really special. I like theater of any kind. I got a lot of performing arts stuff. And I think that the show that she put on with her team.
By the way, it wasn't me. It was us. You know, you met Jonty as well there. Just he was very busy in the being front, the guru. I was just doing the sound. But yeah.
So the show was really special for me because it felt really authentic, had a lot of integrity. And I think that the performers were really courageous, really exposing themselves and sharing it, you know, a part of their lives with us. It was, some of it was a bit edgy.
Why? Do you think seeing people fucking on stage is edgy? Oh, come on, babs. Just, you know, loosen up a little bit.
Oh, my God. You are hanging out in the wrong circle.
No, she's in the right circle. Okay.
She's actually in the right circles.
Now.
Maybe.
Oh, yeah. Really. Now she is.
That's right.
Look, seeing someone without their top was, like, edgy for me. I'm so used to naked women running around me now. It's just, it's so scary. When I see a naked woman, I'm like, not a naked woman, not a pussy.
You know, there was such a beautiful moment at Sexpo when you came up to me, and it was such an emotional moment from you. And you said, since I've met, I can't believe how my life has changed and everything. You said, it was such a beautiful moment of sharing.
Lisa, you didn't tell me that.
I didn't tell you everything. Okay. I show you everything.
Well, I want to know. I'm
really
a deep person.
The honor that we have in sharing what we have been able to, especially in the past couple of weeks, the boundaries we've been able to push, the impact on people's lives has been mind-blowing. For me, it's the culmination of you know, 20-odd years or more of working towards this and having the space and the people, the crew, the team, the commitment to do it is mind-blowing. And it really, it makes me incredibly emotional at what we were able to do.
Babs, but you work in events. You do very crazy stuff. You work.
I do. I do a lot of crazy events across the continent, actually.
More celebrities than we all know together.
Okay, Babs, we want celebrities in here. We want the interesting
kind of
ones. You name it, we want them.
Naked ones.
Naked ones.
See, Lisa isn't interested in people with clothes anymore.
You know, I went to work. I went to work the other day, my normal day-to-day job, and I walked in and everybody was like fully dressed. And I'm like, this is boring.
This is very boring.
This is so boring.
So you got to spend more time in my work.
There we go.
You should. Okay. That's really awesome. Three things you said. So you mentioned two. What was the third one?
The third one was the, shall we say, male review show. I don't know what they call them these days.
Yeah.
Magic Mike.
Kyle and the boys.
Yeah, I saw them, the movie, obviously, and I'm a fan of the artwork.
That's a nice way of putting it.
They have eight different artworks
very
and they're
nice
belly.
Beautiful arts
very
on
nice.
Stage. Even I can admit that art is beautiful. Hey?
Yeah. I was very inspired by some of the moves. That was just really it was really special. Cool. Eye candy. I really need that.
Cool. Babs, we're running out of time, but it'll be really cool for you to come back and chat more with
us. I'd love to.
Where do people go for support? If people want to contact you directly, can they?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously I don't post my street address and my ID number and things like that online. But definitely you can find me on Facebook. I've got a page. It's facebook.com/doc.anna.thompson. That's A N A.
And that will be on our page.
Yeah, the links will be up. I'm on Twitter. My handle is anaphylaxis with a U at the end. People can get in touch with me and
just
definitely
for shocking value. Ha ha.
Yeah, absolutely right. Because I mean you've met me now, you can see I am such a rebel. I just can't pretend not to be.
You're crazy.
Yeah, I'm off the hook. Is that the right Did yes. I say it right? Okay, good. But definitely there are resources, there are support structures and things like that. Obviously, we have to protect ourselves a little bit. So, you know, we don't say, oh, all the trans people in Joburg are meeting at the Wimpy tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock because that's a way to attract the
I've tried doing it. No one ever comes.
Yeah, well, it's because we knew you were going to be there.
No, but the wrong people come.
Yeah.
Up your level a bit and go to Spur.
There we go.
Yeah, definitely. We're trying to move to Spur, but we're having our budget meeting next week.
It won't be about Spur.
Yeah, the national meeting of all the trans people is happening, and we're going to discuss that.
All free advertising.
Absolutely right. But definitely, you know, we just have to balance that access to the resources with our own safety. But definitely get in touch with me, and I'll put you in contact with the right people. The other shameless plug that I just want to make is for the support group. It's called Control Alt Gender. They are on Facebook. They have a page. You can like the page. You can send a message to the page. They will get in touch with you and tell you where you can get that support.
Awesome. Fantastic. Thank you. Our Dirty Dictionary word.
Oh, yes. Please do share.
Engaged is for a gay couple who are engaged.
Oh, that is adorable.
I was close. I was very close.
You were very close, but you're a little bit graphic with that.
Yeah, just because their fingers are inside each other doesn't necessarily
their fingers
mean
are inside
engaged.
Each other's rings. You got it wrong.
Yes, exactly.
That's what I meant to say. You know, articulation, not my strong point.
So they are engaged, the gay couple that are engaged, which is very cute. So you have two beautiful workshops this week. One of my favorite experiences on Tuesday night, water massage. Information is on the website, www.eroslife.co.za. Please visit that, and lots of exciting and cool stuff coming up there. It's been really awesome, and I would really love to continue this conversation and to take it other places. Because there was so much that we spoke about before we came on here that we didn't even get close to. You know, things that are so important, like body image. Where does that fit in?
And I want to see when you know, when you become aggressive and bitchy. I want to see that.
Oh, some things can't be unseen, so I must just warn you. But
we will try bring out the inner bitch.
We'll periscope it next time. We'll definitely.
Time for the claws to come out. Babs, you were on the verge of wanting to say something.
No, I can't imagine him being anything but.
That's her.
Charming.
Thank you.
It's silence.
Yeah, that's her, not them.
Yes, it's.
I'm an idiot.
We're going to put
that's
you on the cross.
Just correct it. Move on. That's it.
Yeah. We'll punish her just now. I promise you. We have a pedal.
Yeah, we do. We got lots of wonderful toys here, which is really really cool. This has been really beautiful. Thank you. Your willingness to share and your vulnerability is so appreciated.
Mm. Yeah, I'd just like to say thanks, John T, and the team for having me here and giving me this opportunity to speak out. And, you know, I am putting myself out here, but I believe in what I'm doing, and I just want to form that connection.
Yeah, you should.
And just having had the opportunity to do so has been magnificent. Mm. So thank you very much.
Thank you. It's one of the most important things for us is to have a platform that we can literally talk about anything, whether we agree with it or not is irrelevant, but that we can have the spectrum of discussion is so important. Just a place for us to be able to share is just so important. It really means so much to us.
Yeah, I always say the first step is starting the conversations. Let's have these dialogues. Mm. Let's put it on the table. Mm. And then if there's prejudice or misunderstanding or discrimination or whatever it is, we can start to unpack it.
Exactly.
And once we got to the bottom of it, then we can resolve it.
What stands behind it? When a person shuts me up and just says, no, you are wrong, then I know there's nothing I can argue with, nothing I can open up, nothing I can, no sense will come from there, no healing will come from there.
Yeah.
And once you ask, what's wrong about that, then all of a sudden things start to get clear and people educate themselves. Anastasia, you are phenomenal.
Yeah.
Thank you. And it's been wonderful to meet you all.
Thank you. So I'm going to try and play a song, which our controller is not here. So there's a whole lot of stuff on the screen here. So we're going to click on it. We're going to see what happens.
Oh, that's amazing.
Absolutely. So I have no idea what these all are. Brittany, we are definitely not playing.
Why not? Hit me, baby, one more time.
It's Brittany,
bitch. Yeah, it's Brittany, bitch.
You can listen to Brittany on your own.
I'm going to do that. I've got tomorrow, have you got your iPod?
Yes, sweetie. We're going now with the movement.
I'm going to try something called This Summer Is Going to Hurt Like a
Motherfucker.
Who sings this? Do we know?
Yeah, Maroon 5.
Okay, Maroon 5. Maroon 5, I quite like. So
They're Let's wonderful, but it's all censored. It's like, this summer's going to hurt like a beer. That's okay. what they do in the radio.
Okay, so that's the rest of Radio Land. Yes. We do the real thing here.
Yes.
We will be back next week with a magical mystery thing. I hope it's going to happen.
Okay.
If it doesn't, we're not going to
we'll
say
tweet
anything
about
in
it.
Advance. Absolutely.
All right.
But I'm pretty sure that it will. So be really awesome. We are going to miss you next week.
Thank you. I'm going to be in Israel. Hopefully we can Skype from there, eh?
And that'll be very, very
I'll show you the Israeli sex positions, the favorite ones with a falafel. All right.
So I watched an episode of Chopped last night. You know, okay. This cooking show. An Israeli dude won.
You know what, the Israelis, they're just, you know cool. what, they buy their way through.
Yeah. So we wish you all so much pleasure. A wonderful weekend.
This is CliffCentral.com.